The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Escalating tensions in Lebanon, the safety of Irish peacekeepers is reported to be increasingly at risk as Israel is said to have fired on UN positions, including those manned by Irish troops. Now, thankfully, all personnel remain safe, but there are, of course, concerns about the future of Ireland's peacekeeping role. I'm joined in studio by Lieutenant General Sean Clancy, the Chief of Staff of the Defence Forces. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat. Thank you.
You can bring us up to speed, up to date with exactly the status of those Israeli attacks on any Irish positions.
I'd be happy to do so, Pat. Yes, and as you can appreciate, it's a very kinetic and fluid environment right now. We have Israelis, I suppose, incurring right across the entirety of the Blue Line in the Lebanon. The Blue Line, is for your listeners, is about 124 kilometres in length. And as you know, UNIFIL are primarily based in southern Lebanon, which is where they're mandated to be. There's nearly 10,000 UNIFIL forces in that area, and quite an extensive engagement across all of the Blue Line has been occurring, in particular over the last week. I suppose for your listeners, in terms of context, you know, this has been evolving in particular for the last year since we saw the 7th of October attack by Hamas on Israel, the horrendous attack that killed nearly 1,200 Israelis at that time and 251 of them were taken hostage. And since that time, we've seen an escalation in terms of tensions and a de-escalation of the security environment right throughout the Middle East, but in particular in the Lebanon since June of 24.
Now, if you put the position of the UNIFIL force in context, on one side you have the Lebanon and you have potentially rocket sites which are being launched at Israel and Israel's Iron Dome by and large containing those attacks. Yes. And then on the other hand, you've got Israel. Were they beginning to kind of deploy? Could you see it that they were beginning to deploy in anticipation of whatever might happen?
Yes, we would be monitoring, I suppose, what we would call indicators. And indicators, as you rightly said, Pat, would be kind of how they would deploy. Israel have been, I suppose, launching a land, maritime and air attack in particular in response to the Hamas attack last year. And we've seen in the last week or so the manifestation of that in the land incursions along the Blue Line. But prior to that, Israel would have put in what we call military zones and what they refer to as military zones on the Israeli side, on the southern side of the Blue Line. And that would enable them to build up, I suppose, their forces in those areas. It came in one area called Matula, which is on the eastern side of the Lebanon at that time initially. Then it came just to the south of where the Irish position was, and that's where you saw the tensions beginning to grow around the Irish areas.
652
was the outpost. Yeah. There are 25 outposts along the Blue Line from different nationalities. So I suppose if I could describe to your listeners, Lebanon in the south is broken into two sectors, east and west sectors, effectively. And you have different battalions along the Blue Line, and you have one country that generally is in charge of that area. Ireland has one of those areas, the area of operation for Ireland, Ireland Polish Battalion, it's called. Then you have the Ghanaians, and to the west you have the Italians, which we're seeing some more kinetic activity in the last 24, 40 hours. And to the east, then you have others such as Indonesia and Spain and Spanish that are involved.
Now, you do all have to talk to each other. I presume English is the language of command.
Yes, English is the language of command. The force commander is Spanish, a very competent two-star major general. He's in a very difficult position right now and obviously is performing at a very high level. And Irish troops would fall under his command as Ireland has participated in the UNIFIL mandated mission and we give those troops under command to him. So he, if you like, decides under the guidance of the UN and the direction of the UN and his mandate how he will dispose of his forces in terms of their disposition. 652 is an Irish outpost led by Ireland and by Irish troops, 30 of them right on the Blue Line.
And now the Israelis last week or earlier this week were wrapped around 652 effectively, weren't they?
Yes, they were in our position in the vicinity of Irish 652 and, you know, we're there by design, not by force.
But in a sense, it was the safest place to be. The Israelis are not going to shell themselves.
Well, we have, during that time, we of course have very strong communication lines with Israel through the Force Command in terms of the liaison branch. And we have a senior Irish officer, a lieutenant colonel in that branch, leading part of that effort, yeah, if you like, of communication. But we also have many channels of communication with all parties. And we maintain those open communications. And that was, of course, facilitated some of the knowledge and understanding of what was going on the ground. It didn't lessen the danger and the heightened tension and sensitivity around and in the vicinity of 652 at that time. And we did see some accidental, if you like, damage to the post during that period of time.
At the hands of Hezbollah or the IDF?
Primarily the IDF, but there were some Iron Dome sort of shrapnel and debris that came, yeah, in the area, but not directly in. But we saw some, so there was some deliberate, if you like, destruction of in the area of 652, which some shockwave, for instance, would have caused a broken window, which you would have heard about, for instance, in the actual.
Now, the Taoiseach has been critical of Israel for attacking Irish troops in Lebanon. What was the nature of the attack to which he's referring?
Well, quite rightly so. In the last 48 hours, we have seen a change. As your listeners may know, the area around the Irish post has been vacated, and there's been a sense of a reprieve, if you like. How that long that will last, the tactical nature of it from Israel's point of view, is yet to be determined. But we have seen a more escalated level of engagement towards the west of Lebanon in the Italian battalion area that I've referred to. And we have seen some, what I would suggest is reckless, intimidatory actions by Israel against UN posts.
And is that your understanding of what they're at? They're trying to, rather than try to cause loss of life, which would be a big international incident if Israel was to kill any UN personnel deliberately, as it were, it's intimidatory, is it?
Well, you're quite right. It is a very grave, it is already a grave breach of international humanitarian law. It's also a very grave breach of the agreed Security Council resolution of which Israel is party to, as well as is the Lebanese and the Lebanon. They're breaching all of that in their actions right now. And when they deliberately target cameras, we have seen a tank shot in one of the posts yesterday. And only before I came in here this morning, I've been briefed on what is an ongoing matter in UNIFIL headquarters, where two tank rounds have landed in the front of the hospital area there, and there are two peacekeepers injured. That is still a live action that we're assessing, that's being assessed by the force commander at this point in time. Now, this is an egregious breach, and as you rightly said, an attack on the UN in this, if it's deliberate. And I'm not to say what the intentions of Israel are.
Has there been any word
case
from Israel as to why shells should land close to a hospital?
No, there aren't. And we saw last night in the UN Security Council where the Israeli ambassador has indicated again that they have requested the UN to go back 5 kilometres from the blue line. But the UN are mandated to be where they are. Undersecretary General Lacroix is very strong in terms of this. There is tremendous solidarity and unity amongst all troop contributing nations, of which there are 50 in the UNIFIL mission alone. There's a very strong sense of solidarity in terms of our mandate to stay where we are for now, because it's important that UNIFIL are there in terms of their observation. They are the eyes and ears of the world, if you like, right now. And it isn't a kind of a binary choice, stay or go. You know, this mission has been ongoing. Ireland have been there since 1978. And right now, it's important. Tomorrow, or next day, as you say, when we, you know, to try and get a de-escalation, a cessation, and bring about the opportunity for diplomacy to fill the void.
If you go, very hard to come back.
Very difficult. And we see what has happened in Gaza, for instance, where there were no eyes and ears, where there was no visible reporting, and nobody can be held to account, per se. But everything that is happening right now in the Lebanon is being observed, monitored, and people, and it will be held to account in time. And that is very, very important.
Now, you have obviously command and control, and you've got very senior officers making these decisions, and indeed decisions made perhaps even in New York at the United Nations. How did the actual rank and file feel about all of this? Because they are doing the bidding, if you like, of the officers. I mean, are they gung-ho to stay there and do their job? What's your feeling about it?
I would be very slow, and I wouldn't use the term gung-ho.
No,
in all due respect, respect yourself, Pat. These are professional, trained soldiers. They do their job and they do it to the highest of standards. We speak every day to our operations, to the battalion commander and to our people on the ground. I spoke this morning at 8 o'clock to the battalion commander of 124 Battalion, and I get a full sweep of how. He goes around and speaks to everybody in his battalion every day, to the people in the outpost in 652. They're resolute in their role. They're resolute in their approach. Yes, there is a heightened danger there. Yes, there is heightened risk. Conditions in terms of are more akin to now a kinetic environment that exists, as you would expect for soldiers to actually execute. This is their job. They understand it. And in general, morale is very good. Their spirits are high and they're resolute in terms of their approach and what they have to do and the reason they are there. There is stress. There is anxiety. I don't want to diminish that amongst the troops. It's there. It's natural. It's a natural human. And I also don't want to diminish how families are feeling at home, because they have a more difficult job because they're separated from it. And the understanding that they're showing right now is extraordinary. And I'm very appreciative of the understanding that the families are showing, in particular in these difficult
now,
times.
Now, a big change from years ago when people went to Lebanon or to any other area of operation for the Irish Defence Forces in service of the UN, they might get a phone call once a week. They might, you know, now I presume they can use mobile phones to talk very regularly with family. Do you have rules and regulations about how often they may communicate?
We don't necessarily have rules and regulations because it wasn't up to this point. We do have very specific rules around social media, around operational security, and we have seen we have seen some breaches of that, which is a kind of a natural instinctive response. Sure. But for the communications point of view, Wi-Fi has been up and down and we provide them with Wi-Fi. But generally, in general, communications have remained strong. People are able to communicate with their families on a daily basis if they so wish.
So they can say goodnight, Daddy.
They can,
or Mammy,
they can for the most part. But of course, you know, there have been prolonged periods when they have been in what we call level 3. So they have been in sheltered bunkers, staying out of the way of harm's way, if you like, while there's ongoing
and no signal,
activity.
No Wi-Fi in that situation.
And in those circumstances, that can happen. And I know at home, when somebody sends a message, they expect an instantaneous response and they may not get it for 5-6 hours.
And then they worry.
And that's a worry and that's an anxiety, and I appreciate that and I understand that. And I'm talking to the battalion, and the battalion commander is talking to each, and he only this morning says, I've gone around and asked him, and I do it every day and early. He tweeted, have you spoken home today? Have you? And some of them said, not yet. And what they are actually getting on with, because they're in the cut and thrust, and they're there in it. And they're probably, and I understand the separation is in itself an anxiety for families.
Something like this, when it happens, and obviously people are in harm's way, although you try to keep them safe all the time. Is that good or bad for recruitment to the Defence Forces? Because it's one of the things that you want to encourage more people to join up. And I have no doubt in the coming years, we will have a need for a much bolstered set of defence forces.
Yeah, there are a number of things I think we can reflect upon and perhaps in time have a greater reflection on. I think one thing that is coming out and very strongly is the level of professionalism, the level of training. These people, our soldiers are well equipped and they have a strong sense of resilience. The other part, of course, is that this will be experiential growth for everybody, in particular that those young soldiers and new and those that are there for the first time, if you like, in 652 and in 245. We have people there, of course, that have been there for many, many times. Mm-hmm. And some can recall the 2006 war, which very similar conditions prevailed around our posts and in the vicinity of our posts during that particular war. And it's not the first time that Lebanon has been through this. So there is an experiential growth, particularly for those that are there for the first time and maybe not perhaps understanding fully, you know, that when we say, you know, we send our peacekeepers to areas which are high risk and there is risk. That's why they are there in the first place, to try and maintain the peace, to try and support the local community, the civilization, and to allow democracy or sovereignty to take hold, which is what has been trying to happen.
And going back to that question then, does it tend to be good for recruitment? You know, when the Defence Forces get exposure like this in the media as to the job they're doing and, you know, the training they have and the risks they take?
I suppose I haven't reflected on it in those terms, Pat, to be quite honest, because I don't, you know, I would nearly say that's nearly that would be nearly exploitatory on my part. Yeah. I suppose it's a human reaction to perhaps look at it as a positive in the sense that people understand more what it is our job is. And for some people, that is a very attractive piece in terms of actually understanding. And the understanding is the most important thing. And there is a higher level of commitment here. This is you have sworn a loyalty to the state. You know, you have given up several rights and you've given up many rights, in fact. And one of those is the fact that you will put yourself in harm's way for others. And when that statement is made, it can often be lost on people. Yeah. But it's when you see things that are happening right now and have happened in the last 2 weeks, it physically manifests itself and people go, yeah, that's what that means.
Yeah, that's the job they signed up
and
to do.
And that is our job.
Now, the question of the Defence Forces and its preparedness in the event of an emergency that might affect us here. I mean, the likelihood of invasion by any third party is very remote. So the nature of any attacks on Ireland will be probably very different going forward. It could be cyber attacks. It could be attacks on our underground or undersea cables. That's the sort of vulnerability. How prepared is the Defence Forces for that future?
Well, I think you're quite right, Pat, that the nature of war, if you like, or the security environment has changed exponentially, in particular in the last 2 decades, as a consequence of technology and many other things. I think as an island nation, we have often perhaps used our surrounding water as a blanket or a comfort blanket. I think there is a heightened awareness, in particular in government, and we see that through the budget lines that have been increased and year on year. We saw through the commission. And you will note in that, and across government, things like our critical national infrastructure, you know, and attacks on our IT and so on that are, you know, vulnerabilities that exist. And that is a whole-of-government approach. From a defence and security point of view, the Defence Forces has to play its role in all of those things. So, for instance, our maritime domain, which is a priority domain for government and for the Defence Forces at this time. And we see that through the efforts to try and recruit, retain people, to try and get the new resources and capabilities. And we're looking at all those in terms of the gaps we have around our undersea capabilities, our underwater capabilities. We're looking at it in terms of our ability to see in the skies through our primary radar. And these are all very targeted capabilities that we are actually actively pursuing, not looking at, we're actively pursuing. And there will be kind of very positive steps in terms of acquiring those taken before the end of the year and into next year. The government have been very supportive of this. We've seen nearly 120 million euros increase in our budget to 1.35 billion this year. And that will increase year on year for the next number of years in line with the level of ambition set down by government. So the country is never fully prepared, but we have to be vigilant and constant in our approach to that. Even today, there is a conference in Valencia around our undersea cables and networks and this growing understanding nationally. It also goes to our energy. Energy, you know, all our databases, all our technology, all our FDI is all dependent on energy, security, connectivity. All of these things are where the next war, if you like.
Yeah, and I mean, in terms of hardening the defences against attack of undersea cables or undersea interconnectors, be it electricity or gas connectors, all of that, because the other day, talking to the Israeli ambassador, I suggested that Israel could be very vulnerable if rockets did manage to hit the 3 critical electricity generation stations in Israel. It could bring the economy to its knees. So have we plans to harden our defences of those vulnerable pieces of infrastructure?
Yeah, I mean, it is clear that, you know, Israel has, you know, I don't want to diminish, Israel has been at the receiving end of nearly 10,000 rockets in the last 12 and more in the last 12 months alone. So we don't want to diminish the fact that Israel has been the target. And likewise, Ireland, you know, this comes to a risk assessment as well, Pat. You have to measure the level of risk and then, you know, appropriately disperse your resources and target the areas that are of most vulnerability. Right now, there is a critical national infrastructure strategy being developed that's being led by the Office of Emergency Planning, and our team there are contributing to that. And this is where you get to the point of deterrence more than hardening. Deterrence because no country can protect fully.
Well, we saw Nord Stream
and correct,
pipelines.
I mean, and protected by 3 or 4 NATO allies, and yet there was damage done there. So this is a matter of intelligence, information work, and deterrence collectively. But state and non-state actors that are determined to damage your infrastructure in that way, and we are subjected and have been subjected to hybrid attacks such as the HSE COVID, or at the end of COVID, which was extremely damaging to the state, but it has created a sense of heightened awareness in the state.
Finally, back to our original topic, and that is our people with UNIFIL. I presume there's a plan B should things really go pear-shaped.
The decision on that will come to the force commander from the United Nations. And of course, the situation where you have the growing danger, the growing risk, and that's the next day piece, if you like. Yes, there are plans being developed, and they have been developed, and again, they will come through the UN, whether to be executed or not. It is no small task to have 10,000 UN troops leave the Lebanon. I don't foresee that today. I don't foresee that tomorrow. But that is the decision of the UN and the force commander, under the advice of the force commander, in due course. For now, we stay strong, we stay resilient, we stay in our positions, we observe what is happening, we observe the breaches and the grave violations of humanitarian law, of international law and agreements that are taking place right now in the Lebanon. And we place as our number one priority the safety and security of our personnel. And that's the most important thing at this time.
Lieutenant General Sean Clancy, Chief of Staff of the Defence Forces, thank you very much for joining us in studio.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.